Bob Whitaker has been there and done that in the world of politics. His unique perspective is insightful and vital. You may not agree with everything he says, but I guarantee that he will make you think. Robert Whitaker was born and raised in South Carolina and attended the University of South Carolina and the University of Virginia Graduate School. He's been a college professor, international aviation negotiator, Capitol Hill senior staffer, Reagan administration appointee, and writer for the Voice of America. He has written numerous articles and two books. Bob now lives in Columbia, South Carolina.
Nice to hear you, Bob. This is Morten, and I'm here with Hans. We are two Norwegians, readers of your blog, big fans of your work, and I think Hans as well is a member of Bob's Underground Seminar, and we're going to ask you some questions.
Well, ask away.
Yeah.
Ask and you shall be answered. Somebody else said that, but I don't think it's copyrighted.
It must be early over there. I hope we didn't wake you up.
No, it's noon over here.
Okay. So how are you doing?
Pretty good. I have a nephew who's in med school in Moscow, so I'm sort of used to the time difference. You don't have any accent at all.
I don't know if Hans has more of an accent.
Well, I might have, but you just have to live with it, I think.
Well, I have, in Norwegian, I have no accent whatsoever. I don't speak a word of it.
Yes, well, we have never done an interview before, so is there anything you'd like to talk about?
Well, I want to ask you right quick, can you understand Icelandic?
No, we can't. It's a very different language.
Yeah, I heard something like that. I sat around at conferences with Danes and Norwegians and Swedes, and they had no trouble at all. But they said they have real trouble with Icelandic.
Yeah, that's true. I guess Icelandic is an older form of Norwegian, and we speak something closer to Danish.
Yeah, I think that they go back to archaic words when they can in Iceland.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard about your president, Barack Obama, winning the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, anybody who's a liberal wins all the prizes. They had one fellow at Emory University. He wrote a piece about how the founding fathers really didn't have any guns. And he proved it with sources that he made up. And by the time that they found out he had made the sources up, he had already received about a dozen awards, you know, because it was politically correct what he came up with. And so he had to quit his job. So this is pretty normal. I mean, if you write something that is politically correct, you get awards by the dozen. And somebody like, Obama is just going to get awards up to his... whatever.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, if you make a movie about the Holocaust, you're going to get...
Right, yeah. Every year there's another great movie about the Holocaust in black and white, and every year it wins all the prizes.
It seems everything surrounding Obama is like a myth. What is he actually doing in American politics? Is he changing anything at all?
He's being black. You know, there was a saying about television, the medium is the message. And that essentially is what he's doing. The thing is, the president in the United States today has no power, which sounds funny. But remember, I was on Capitol Hill. I spent a lot of years doing this for a living. And there was a time when the United States had a small small national debt. There was a big debate about whether we should spend more or less. We had a lot of flexibility. But now, the president really can't initiate much of anything. Both Democratic administrations, Clinton in 1993 and Obama now, started off trying to reform Medicare. And both of them ran into a brick wall.
So this has been attempted before?
Oh, yeah. In 1993... Hillary Clinton had this committee on essentially socialized medicine, and it was a total failure. It was their first big legislative initiative, and this is looking much the same.
So what do you think the effect of calling anyone who opposes Obama a racist will be?
Oh, that's great. They've gotten to the point that even National Review, the most respectable of respectable conservative magazines, is beginning to make fun of that. Normally, a respectable conservative here, if anybody says racist, they'll hide under the table and pee in their pants. But it's getting so blatant now that I'm really enjoying it.
I'm a little bit curious. What do you think about Barack Obama as a person? What is he thinking right now? Does he understand he's just a pawn? Or?
I don't think he's anything much. I mean, he's not really there. He can give a nice guy image, but there are no ideas there. There's nothing there. It's always hard to describe nothing.
Yeah.
But essentially, he's an actor, and he doesn't really have any personal positions, even the ones they worry about. Some people, Obama, as I say, the medium is the message. He's black. That's it.
Well, I know that his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, is a Zionist extremist. Who are the other people in charge, so to speak, if Obama isn't?
Oh, I stopped getting paid for that many years ago, so I don't keep up.
Oh, Hans, you had a question?
You talked about this racist stuff. When calling someone racist doesn't really do anything anymore, so then people might not be that afraid of speaking their mind. Is that a possible future?
Asking about the charge of being a racist, it isn't so much the charge now as it is that they, sort of like in Europe, where you can go to prison for saying the wrong thing about race. And in the United States, you can be ruined. And some conservatives, even respectable conservatives, who are some of my least favorite people, even they are beginning to complain about the totalitarian environment here, which by your standards is probably a very libertarian environment. I mean, at least you don't go to jail here.
Right. Now, what do you mean about respectable conservative?
Well, we have a liberal establishment and a conservative establishment. And the conservative establishment, the only way to deal with liberals is to laugh at them and to remind them of the last time they made a prediction it was wrong, and not to worry about, and if they throw out, and ask them when they say racist, what does that word mean? No conservative has the guts to ask that, because we have a liberal media here, as pretty well everybody else does. And if you are going to make your living as a commentator on our media, you have to be declared respectable.
Mm.
And a conservative who violates the rules of respectability, for example, asking what the word racist means, he'll be off.
So you are not a respectable conservative then?
Oh, no. I certainly am not. My first book was called A Plague on Both Your Houses. So,
I don't remember exactly where I read it, but somewhere on your website you said that we should have one goal, and that is the preservation of the white race.
Yeah.
And just stick to that one goal.
Right.
And as it stands now, white people will become the minority in the United States, countries like Norway, Sweden, Finland within 50 years,
yeah.
Germany and Britain even sooner. But you've said that becoming a minority isn't necessarily a bad thing. What do you think will happen when the first European country becomes non-white?
Well, the Europeans have just collapsed psychologically, so even worse than we have. So I think it will be quite a while. But the point is, as you say, becoming a minority is not necessarily bad. You're in a better... You see, there's a simple matter of arithmetic. Again, it's basic. It's so basic people don't see it. The white race makes a lousy majority, but it would make one hell of a minority.
In other unified, words, yeah.
Right. You can, for example, you can elect a president in a three-party race, whereas you couldn't possibly elect one in a two-party race. We're in an impossible position because most of us are against us at the moment. But as time passes, as we become a conscious minority, we would be a very powerful minority in a 3- or 4- or 5-way race.
Yeah. Now, what do you think will make us a conscious majority? Because right now it seems like we're an unconscious majority. Do you think we'll automatically become more conscious as a minority?
Oh, yeah. I can see these things, but it's very hard for other people to see them. I read National Review, the publisher of National Review, did the foreword to My Plague on Both Your Houses, and he gave me a lifetime subscription, so I still get it, and it's sort of the standard bearer for the respectable conservatives. Do you know National Review?
Yeah.
And one of their writers is really beginning to emphasize this business of birth rates. Now, this is National Review. This doesn't impress you the way it does me. The idea of any conservative not peeing all over himself on issues like this is just astonishing. And he even criticized the Canadian race hate laws. I mean, this for a conservative, for a respectable conservative who's trying desperately to make sure liberals, don't cut him off, is just hard to believe. I mean, it doesn't sound like much if you haven't been in these politics for a long time, but some of the things that they're saying is getting a little bit closer to what I say. They have to reinterpret it and so forth.
Well, you have done a couple of interviews on television, but you didn't get invited back.
Actually, I didn't. I did get invited twice by Fox by different people, but okay. I don't even know if the second one was aired. I don't think I've ever listened to an interview I did, and I've done, Lord knows how many. Only a couple of television ones, because actually even, public radio here is extremely liberal. I mean, it's known for that. And they even had me when the Reagan administration went in 1981, the media didn't know anybody in the entire administration except Reagan. And so they even had me do a couple of editorials for National Public Radio until somebody finally told them who the hell I was. But it would be interesting if Norwegian radio were to announce that they don't know a soul in the new administration. Wouldn't that be sort of interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that shows how extreme. When Reagan won the presidency and the Senate in 1980, all of their contacts, the moderate Republicans and the Democrats, the liberal Democrats, they didn't know anybody in Reagan's administration.
They had to pick someone.
Well, they had to sort out the respectables.
Yeah.
That's why I got on there a couple of times, was because they hadn't, made the cut yet.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make your living on television or radio, you have to be harmless. Conservatives, respectable conservatives, are very useful, because when a liberal says the same thing again, he makes another proposal, they never remind him of the last 14 he made that collapsed or were stupid.
They have to avoid anything that makes liberals uncomfortable.
Yeah, right. That's why things like the mantra and so forth, they can't touch anything like that, because then they'd lose their living.
Yes.
Well, that's the respectable conservative. I'm sure you've got some version of the same thing over there.
Yeah, certainly we have the conservatives who sort of just respond to whatever the socialists are saying, and certainly not talk about race. The right wing says something about the immigrants, and then the socialists call them racist, and then they start apologizing.
But going back to Europe a little bit, and I'm sure you've traveled a lot, how do you see things unfolding in Europe now in regards to the political parties, such as the BNP and the NPD in Germany? Will they gain enough popular support to meet the demographic disaster that's coming in Europe now?
I really can't tell. What's funny historically is that back in the 1920s and 1930s, early 30s, it was said that Hitler was the only person who couldn't say what he meant because they had hate laws then, too. Most people don't know that. That was why the Nazis would use the full name, like, you know, Barry Morris Isaacson, when they were talking about somebody before he took power. They didn't talk about Jews specifically because it was illegal. So, as you can see, those hate laws really prevent problems.
Well, I didn't know that.
Nobody does. This is the kind of thing that, you know, a respectable conservative would get in trouble for mentioning. You know, I'm not joking. You know, it's just they have to, the conservative here has to make himself acceptable to the liberals. I've been noticing lately, the Democrats are admitting that if they hadn't pushed gun control so much, they wouldn't have lost the control of Congress that they had for so long. And the arguments for gun control are now getting, I mean, they've just stopped because it's so silly. The problem is over here, that if you have a gun law, I used to work at a prison. I have never heard, even secondhand, of any criminal who ever had any trouble getting hold of a gun.
Right.
No matter what the gun law is. The only people that don't have guns, when you have gun laws here, where we're used to guns, is an honest citizen. But it took a long time for this to settle in, and conservatives never pushed that issue because they know that it makes liberals look silly.
Well, here in Europe, we've already had our guns taken from us.
Oh, yeah. Except where?
Switzerland.
Yep. I wrote political speeches and other fantasies when I was on the Hill, and I would keep writing. The NRA, our National Rifle Association, would never mention Switzerland. And so, my boss, I kept writing him speeches about Switzerland, but conservatives never mentioned that. You know, the liberals will always say, well, they have tight gun laws and very few crimes in Germany, tight gun laws, very few crimes in Norway. But no conservative is going to say, well, they have just as few crimes in Switzerland, and the place is armed to the teeth.
Now, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they use that argument?
Because it embarrasses liberals. The liberals are not there to be embarrassed. The conservatives have to be respectable. That means that they cannot ask. They can't make it hot for liberals. They are essentially, they're here to make it look like there's an opposition.
Yes, they're the perfect opposition to the liberals.
Yeah.
Because if they were speaking all by themselves, it would be much more obvious to everybody.
They are literally chosen by the liberals.
Yeah.
But most people don't notice that, and obviously nobody's going to tell them. But that's what I mean by respectable conservatives.
Now, we've talked about the mantra, Bob's mantra. Now, I would like to read it one time for the listeners, so here goes. Everybody says there is this race problem. Everybody says this race problem will be solved when the third world pours into every white country and only into white countries. The Netherlands and Belgium are more crowded than Japan or Taiwan, but nobody says Japan or Taiwan will solve this race problem by bringing in millions of third worlders and, quote, assimilating, unquote, with them. Everybody says the final solution to this race problem is for every white country and only white countries to assimilate, in effect, intermarry with all those non-whites. What if I said there is this race problem, and this race problem would only be solved if hundreds of millions of non-blacks were brought into every black country and only into black countries? How long would it take anyone to realize I'm not talking about a race problem? I'm talking about the final solution to the black problem. And how long would it take any sane black man to notice this? And what kind of psycho black man wouldn't object to this? But if I tell that obvious truth about the ongoing program of genocide against my race, the white race, liberals and respectable conservatives agree that I am a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. They say they are anti-racist. What they are is anti-white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white.
If we were ever able, if I was ever able to get people to stop saying the mixing of the races, you know, if people back would go up as soon as that is said, we could cut them to pieces.
Yeah, I've often heard that from liberals, that soon all the races of the world will be mixed, and all the problems of the world will be solved. And I ask them, well, what is being done to mix the population of India with the population of China, the two biggest populations in the world? Only white nations are being filled with non-whites, not vice versa.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, you've probably noticed that talking to them, since they're not used to a serious opposition, talking to them is sort of like trying to use a pen to nail down a fly. You know, they keep moving, or as somebody said, trying to push toothpaste back into the tube. You know, they just keep twisting around, and they act like they don't hear you, you know, and what they want desperately to do is to get back to capital letters, T-H-E, the races. And what you have, and that is another thing that no respectable conservative is allowed to do, and that's hammer at a point. You will never see them ask a liberal three times, for God's sake, man, answer the question. You will never see that. They always get off it as soon as the liberal starts, you know, starts evading. As soon as the liberal starts evading here, the conservative gets right off of it, because otherwise he won't be on the next show.
So that's another point there, that we need to stay on message when you're using the mantra and not get away on, for instance, crime statistics or the latest immigrant that crossed the border. We always have to stick to the mantra.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Wonderful. Yeah, that's such a relief. I was about to disagree with you, and I'm so happy to hear you say that. I remember I used to, when I was dealing with communists, they would be talking about Mexican immigrants and all that, and I would say, why is it? Because I had been across a lot of these borders in buses and so forth. And I said, why is it that every communist country has a wall and landmines to keep people in, and America has to build a wall to keep people out? You know, and they'd start talking about something, Vietnam or something, and I'd say, I don't think you heard me. What I asked you was, why does every communist country have landmines and automatic weapons to keep people in, and America has to build a wall to keep people out? I remember one time on the internet saying, well, for the 18th time. And you could almost hear people laughing. You know,
yeah, well,
not let up. But the point is, if communism is okay, why do you have to kill people to try to get out?
Yes, I think that's an excellent point. And
really the only point of any system is whether people want to live in it or not.
I used exactly that argument after listening to you, and it works really well.
Yeah,
they start talking about, you know, well, the unfairness of the Western society or anything. But then you just have to say, well, why is it that all these communist countries is trying to shoot people who try to escape? And then you go back to that point every time.
Yeah, well, if you see, a respectable conservative isn't allowed to do that, which is why we have to do it.
Yeah.
But I have some awfully famous people have been reading the blog, and so we're getting around, but it's fatal. You see, they can't afford this. They can't deal with it.
No, and I also tried discussing the mantra with someone, and just going back to, you know, always white genocide, and proving that all anti-racist arguments are anti-white and leads towards white genocide, and that they can't really answer it.
Yeah, if you can nail them down, it's You will notice, by the way, that almost any organization that has anti-racist in its title is Marxist.
Okay.
That's just something I noticed.
Yes,
over
I know.
Here. Yeah, they had a well, they'll throw that in, and you can tell it's one of the old sort of hippie type, you know, communist things. But yeah, that isn't to. You know, I'm not that worried about the communists now. I just am saying that yes, they are anti-white. They just hate us, and there's nothing, no one who hates you more than a traitor.
And they have this anti-white mentality, and as you were talking about before. You know, the Nazis, for example, they had anti-Semitic mentality, and according to Nazi history, everything that the Jews did was bad. But if you look at the society today, anti-racists have the same anti-white mentality. You know, it's just to the Jews, of course, but to white people. So everything that white people do is evil, and everything that non-whites do is good in a certain way. And, well, could you elaborate on that point?
I like to say to people that if anyone said about Jews what anti-racist, unquote, routinely say about whites, he'd be in jail for anti-Semitism over there. I mean,
and that's quite true.
Yeah. I mean, they say the whites are responsible for all the problems in the world. Well, that sounds familiar. I think I've heard that one before. The whites have got to go, you know, all white countries. Like I say, if you made a list of black countries, blacks notice a pattern like that. If every country you want to pour immigrants into turns out to be black, I don't think it would take a black man more than 2 minutes to realize what you were doing.
But we're sort of trained to be anti-white, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, also, it makes them feel good. It's supposed to be very virtuous. It's supposed to be self-sacrifice.
Yeah, because, you know, when these anti-white liberals, you talked about this another time, they assume white superiority.
Well, it's funny that there is a certain white superiority in that thinking, because they will not tolerate racism among whites.
No.
You get the distinct impression that whites are too good for that.
Yes, the way I view it is that they look at white people as sort of parents and non-whites as children. And children can scream to their parents, but the parents cannot go down to the level of the child and scream back.
That's the exact point, that there is an assumption of moral superiority there, And I think that, as far as I can tell, here, the liberals don't have much different attitude towards blacks than the racists do. I mean, they've got to be taken care of.
Yes, they sort of look down. But on the other hand, we are often called white supremacists, but we do not feel superior.
Yeah.
We feel that we are in a competition with other people and... But it is the liberals or anti-whites who feel superior.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If it weren't for the traitors, we wouldn't have any problems at all.
No. It's the anti-whites among ourselves that is the problem, the main problem.
Bob, I often read your blog, and you wrote an article there called PC Hypnosis, which Dave replied to. Well, he wrote that there are few people, even on your blog, who truly understand what you wrote in that article.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes say that your points are so basic that people don't understand them.
Yeah.
Perhaps you can elaborate on that and what the article is about.
There was a fellow named Isaac Newton. You probably heard of him. Isaac Newton discovered something called gravity. Now, oddly enough, the Egyptian slaves, 4,000 years before him, were perfectly aware of gravity. I mean, when that big old rock rolled over them, you know, they probably noticed, well, damn, there's some kind of gravity here. But it took Isaac Newton to put the universe together using this basic rule. And for the last 5,000 years before Adam Smith ever wrote a word, every merchant paid attention to supply and demand. I mean, they didn't take coals to Newcastle. They didn't take food to places that were bread to places that were raising a surplus of wheat. It was just they didn't do that. So, like the Egyptian slaves noticed gravity. But when I start to go into something basic, I'm in the same position that Newton was or Adam Smith was, that this is much bigger than of course, that you have to go into these basics. And once you go into them, they get damn complicated. It's like gravity, you know, and all those equations that Newton came up with. I mean, I was an economics professor, and I used to have to, when they had seminars, I would have to go up to the board that was full of mathematics. It would fit beautifully into a physics class. But it was all based on supply and demand, just like physics is based on several basic laws. But when you start to really look into them, people get confused. They're used to quoting somebody or, you know, what they just heard. They're not used to hammering on basics. That is also what happens to you, as I said, in the PC hypnosis with the people who are politically correct. If you say the mantra to somebody, they don't hear you.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that, because they are used to thinking of the races.
Well, oftentimes they just deny that there is such a thing as the white race.
Yeah. All I say is, when they say this, that I say, you don't have any trouble with the white race when you're blaming us for anything.
Exactly.
But that doesn't matter. The point is, you see, if you use the mantra, you don't have to prove anything about the white race except that they know exactly what it is, because it's only white countries they're going after. It's a hell of a coincidence if it doesn't exist.
Yes. And as you said, when they're blaming people, for example, talking about slavery or colonization or discrimination or racism, no one has any problem whatsoever to see who is white and who is non-white.
Well, yeah, so, it's like what I said, that no conservative ever asks a liberal, what is a racist? You know, with all the screens and all the amount they use it, he never goes into that question. So that's basics.
They want to avoid the basics.
Yeah. And as I say, some of the points I make, it's sort of like, I'm sure, though I'm not in the same league, Isaac Newton first started making his points about gravity. And people said, you just found gravity? But the point is, the analysis of, it's like I wrote an article today about the simple fact that it is as obvious as gravity, that if you wake up drunk, I've done that a lot in different countries, if you wake up and you look around you and the population has a brown skin, what is the standard of living of that country?
Third world.
Yep. You see it? So like gravity, I mean, here's something, you know that, and yet nobody talks about it.
Everybody knows it on a subconscious level.
The greatest ideas come from taking a basic that everybody knows and analyzing it.
Yes, but then they might start talking about Japan, for example.
Yeah, and I cover that in this thing. The Orientals, Japan, for example, back in the 70s, they were writing about how Japan was going places. Well, Japan went where Orientals always go. It got to our standard of living and stopped.
Yeah, then they stagnate.
Well, they're not so much stagnant. They're not inventive. The breakthroughs are white. Even the Nobel Prizes, a friend of mine was, I told him that look at the Nobel Prizes and you will find that the Oriental ones are always continuations. They're very good continuations, but they're continuations. They're not, you know, fundamental breakthroughs. And he actually went and looked them up, and he said, you know, it's amazing. The Orientals tend to think that our obsession with their IQ is kind of funny, because to them, an IQ is a puzzle. And they go to school 12 hours a day to learn to solve puzzles. But you can't make an intellectual breakthrough by solving puzzles. You can program a computer can be solving, you know, a puzzle, but breakthroughs like Newton's are something unique to whites.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain that to people.
Yeah, in Japan, you often see them making technology smaller or more efficient, but there are very few breakthroughs, even though they have the highest intelligence in the world.
The highest IQ, yeah.
IQ. So is it creativity that's the difference between the white and the Asian race?
No, not really. I mean, I think, for example, people always think, and people always get confused when I say that. If you look at a cartoon, like, do you know BC? Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. It's about cavemen. And the one invention they talk about is the wheel. It's supposed to be the earliest invention of man. I mean, it's sort of a comic thing. You know, they're always talking about the wheel being the oldest invention. But actually, very few societies had the wheel. And now that they have found those white remains in China, I think I understand where China got the wheel. You know, the Egyptians got the wheel because the Hyksos rolled over them in their chariots. They got iron because the Hittites bashed their head in with it. They always talk about how the great civilizations invented this, that, and the other. I don't think they did. I think they, you know, people invaded and brought it in with them. So what I'm saying is, usually people think things come from where we discover them. That's sort of like saying that New York City was invented in the New York City garbage dump, because you can find things. I mean, when historians look, they got to find them first in that garbage dump, and they go and wonder what kind of people live there.
Because they had all the stuff, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, if you're...
And one thing with Egypt, for example, nobody notices is that if you leave something in Egypt, it'll stay there. There is the last big center of the Odinist religion was in Uppsala, as you probably know.
Yeah.
But you can't get to it because there's a church on top of it.
Yeah.
Well, in Egypt, there's nothing on top. It's desert.
Yes, you can just go and dig.
Yeah, or just look around, and there it is. I mean, yeah. If they had done that in Europe, if they had built all those pyramids in Europe, I don't know how many of them would be left. There's not a hell of a lot left of Rome. Anyway, these are just basics. That's what I say. People are confused about when I mention basics like that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Now, you've written a number of books, and what was the purpose of your latest book, Why Johnny Can't Think? And I noticed on your website it is sort of prefaced with Bob's Deadliest Book. Now, I don't know if you've written that, probably not, but what's your goal with that book?
That's a publicity. I sent it to a publisher in Britain because, you know, I'd already published two major books. And they thought they really had something. And when I sent them, they finally read the matter. They agreed to publish it. Then they read the thing, and they wrote back and said not only would they not have anything to do with it, they were going to destroy all correspondence relating to it. It was an attack, basically, on pretty well everybody who buys books. The big buyers, the universities, people like that. My earlier books, this one, I finally published myself, and so it's pretty direct. My first book was A Plague on Both Your Houses, which had a lot to do with Reagan's election. It was in 1976. And then in 1982, it was the New Right Papers. But back then, I wrote books so I could get jobs.
Mm.
If you publish a book, I mean, most people can't publish a political book unless they're the ex-president or ex-head of this, that, and the other. And so I did manage to publish a couple of books with regular publishers, major publishers, and that got me jobs. So this book just cost me money.
St. Martin's Press, Brian wrote.
St. Martin, right, yeah. Actually, this one is Why Johnny Can't Think. There's a book called Why Johnny Can't Read about 30 years ago about how bad the public school system was. And this is about how the universities, they're just, oddly enough, right after I wrote that book, books started talking about, the regular conservatives started writing about how, I talk in that book about how political correctness is a religion. I say it's not like a religion, it is a religion. And then a conservative book came out about, 6 months later, a year later, and it said liberalism is a religion. You know, the point is that a lot of people read my stuff and use it. These things do get out. The problem is, as I said in one article there, if anything is too much identified with my name, then people won't touch it. It's too obvious. They're copying.
Now, because we're Europeans, I'm a little bit curious about your view on European politics. And a lot of European nationalist parties, like Norway's Progress Party, are planning to buy land in African countries and build internment camps to ship all asylum seekers there. And my question then is, why are Western nations having such a hard time just saying, we don't want any non-white people coming here? What's stopping us from just closing down the borders? There's some bureaucracy preventing individual nations from doing this, or is the people not ready for it?
It'd take me a minute to think that over. It's so obvious, again. The conservatives want the cheap labor. The liberals want the votes. In your case, the conservatives want the cheap labor, and the socialists want the votes. Any black man, any colored skin in America, the Democrats spend a huge budget every election just to get minorities to vote. They don't worry about how the minority is going to vote. Everybody knows how they're going to vote. And so the left wants the votes, and the most fanatical pro-immigration people tend to be libertarians. It was the Conservative Party in Australia that got rid of the White Australia policy.
Hmm.
And you will find these people, they talk about movement for capital, labor, and services, as if labor were just one more thing. You know, labor votes, and I put that in my in the New Right Papers, and I was astonished listening to a radio station, some congressman, and he said labor votes. It took me 10 years to get that idea across. That immigrants are different from importing steel or importing computers. You import an immigrant. You're changing the idea that by some magic, something called Norway or something called the Constitution of the United States, there's this magic that when somebody walks across the border, he is suddenly worth more money. But the only reason that labor is worth more money on this side of the border is because this country is run by white people, and that country is run by Mexico.
So with immigration, the liberals and the conservatives have found sort of a comfortable compromise with...
Oh, there's no compromise. They're both wildly for it. The Wall Street Journal, you know, it is the big magazine for the New York Stock Exchange types. It's economically conservative, and for at least 40 years, they have demanded a constitutional amendment that says, quote, "There shall be no borders, period," unquote.
Who thought that would be a good idea?
Well, I mean, you know, they're not just pro-immigration. They want every, as far as they're concerned, it's like the Queen of England. She keeps saying it doesn't matter where some miserable peasant was born as long as they are loyal to the monarchy. You know, as long as you're a part of the old Commonwealth, you know, the only thing that matters is that she was born queen. But the fact that some miserable little peasant was born in the working class in London means nothing. And to the capitalist the working man, it doesn't really matter who he is as long as he provides the labor.
Right. And the socialists are importing votes to stay in power.
Well, they are. The socialists want more coloreds because they'll vote socialists.
Right.
I mean, that's why they have to leave their country, because they made such a mess of it. That's why they're leaving in the first place. They're leaving a country run by Mexicans and coming here. Why? See, that's a basic. Why do you have to, if Mexicans are so great, why do you have to leave a country run by Mexicans? Nobody's going to ask that. That's too basic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in Eastern Europe now, they're starting to open the borders because they're having a higher living standard. So is the only way to protect white countries to have a poor living standard? Or can we do this ideologically?
It's going to take a while, because right now you have too many people who have no identity at all. That is, you know, the established religion of political correctness. As for what's going to happen, you have to, you know, play your politics as they come, you know, not sit around and wait for some revolution. Real war, real political wars, as somebody pointed out, almost every war has been determined before the first shot is fired.
Okay.
In other words, huh?
Okay, go on.
It's the people in the coats and ties, the people on the newspapers, the people who hammered points home. By the time the shooting starts, it's already been decided. World War II was decided before the first shot was fired. Britain had already once, Germany, when Hitler was out in the field, he had watched when England got America into the war and destroyed Germany. But he didn't, you know, when it just happened again. If you could get America into the war against Germany, Germany simply couldn't defeat, you know, a combination of the British Empire and the United States. And that was as predictable as it could be. The war was over when it started. And that's true in just about any war. Our Civil War, if the South had seceded 10 years earlier, they would have won that war.
Now, why is that?
Because the North was growing economically, and the South was not growing nearly as fast. And also moving troops. The railroads were developed in the 1850s. There are a number of reasons, but most historians will agree that if the war had been fought in 1850 instead of 1860, we almost certainly would have won it. But once again, the people who didn't want to go that far in 1850, who didn't want to secede, they essentially determined the South would lose. A lot of them ended up Confederates, but they waited too late. And that, in other words, the Civil War was decided in 1850. But conquering the whole South was a hell of a job. And they needed the railroads and everything. There practically were no railroads in 1850. Oh, there are a lot of different reasons for the fact, but it is true that wars are usually decided by people like us, people who make the point when it counts, long before the torchlight parades and the victory this and the that. You know, I mentioned in the blog, I've mentioned several times that Mussolini almost missed the March on Rome. I guess nowadays you don't know what the March on Rome was.
I heard about it, yeah.
Yeah, but Mussolini almost missed it because he didn't know. He had said we should march to Rome and take over the government. Well, how many times does any radical politician say that? But he said it one time, it caught on, and the damn march was out there waiting for him, and he had to break the speed limit to catch up with it. But well, you never know when those seeds you're planting are gonna, you know, are gonna blow up. We're having here, I have pointed out that the liberals are dead right about one thing, and that is that if Obama had been white, he would have won by a lot more votes.
Yes.
In 1932, one of the most disastrous elections for the incumbents in history, Hoover got something like 40% of the popular vote. He was beaten 60-40. He was crushed. That was because he caused a depression, or a depression happened under him. In 1968, Johnson, who had won the 64 election overwhelmingly, lost because we were mired down in Vietnam. Well, Bush did both. He managed to put the country in depression mode and to get us stuck in a hopeless war in the Middle East. And yet, he didn't lose by anything like, you know, Hoover or Johnson percentage or Humphrey percentages. The only reason that he didn't really get landslided out was because Obama was black. Now, you won't find any conservative who will say that out loud, or they probably aren't even aware of it.
So you said that the politics, well, it will be determined by people like us.
Yeah.
What do you think we should do?
Exactly what I talk about in the blog. It just doesn't sound very exciting. But every time you repeat the mantra at somebody, it has an effect. And the more you insist on it, you just have to work at it.
Yeah. I've read a lot of your posts on Stormfront, and you write a lot of advice to young white nationalists. I think there are a lot of people who look up to you. What is your advice on how we should go into debates and word ourselves when we debate the opposition?
When are we ever asked into a debate? Is anybody ever asked into a debate?
Well, I guess it happens. Or within persons.
I don't know about it. They have ceased. They only debate with respectable conservatives.
Well, for instance, take nationalist leaders in Europe like Nick Rippon.
Yeah. Does he ever use the mantra?
No, he doesn't exactly, and perhaps you would have some advice for him.
He knows me very well.
Oh, really?
When he came over here, yeah. Oh, we know each other very well. And when he came over here, he said he was glad to see me at Clemson University here where he spoke. And we've been, you know, around at the conventions and all that stuff. He knows me very well, but I think one problem, I hope this doesn't sound too bad, but it is a leader has a very strong ego. You know, I told you that if an idea gets tied to me, they won't use it.
Yeah.
It sounds too much like they're imitating. And I think that in his case, the mantra is too much tied to me. That's one thing. Actually, that's more true of the leaders in the United States. But I would have to see the debate situation. See, I used to prep my bosses in Washington for debates, and a lot of times it depends on how the debate goes. So I can't really criticize from here without being on the scene. But I don't know whether he would win more elections. I don't know how many. I think they've elected something like, 50 officials throughout Britain?
Yes, they have.
City council.
Sure.
I think it was something on the order of 50, you know, town councilmen and stuff like that. And that may be what he's emphasizing. Now, if he's trying to win a local election, that's one thing. But if he's trying to get across the point, the mantra would be highly useful. You know, he should be hammering it in. But he's clearly not going to. I don't know why people don't use the thing.
Well, I was actually with Hans. We know each other pretty well. I was with him when he used the mantra, and we were discussing with a girl. And it was quite convincing, so it works in real life. People should try it.
Yeah. Well, it's work, and it you have to repeat yourself and so forth. I guess that's it. I'm not real sure why. Like I say, a lot of my points are so basic. They work. Everybody will admit. I mean, on Capitol Hill, everywhere, they would say, well, what you do works. And then they wouldn't do it.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's like, you know, Nick Griffin never uses, you know, the fact that they are any white. That would seem to be a great point.
Yeah. I heard him use that phrase, anti-white.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
But you have to provide a demonstration, like I say, this happenstance, that it's only white countries. But don't ask me why people don't use these things. You know, I just got through, I talked a little while ago about Switzerland. And one of the biggest points they always use is all the civilized countries in Europe and Canada, they have these strong gun laws, and they don't have much gun crime. And Switzerland is a screaming exception to that, but no conservative ever. I and through speeches I wrote, my bosses were the only people who ever mentioned Switzerland in the gun debates. Now, if you know, if you're going to ask me why, I'm not going to be able to answer you. It worked.
Yes, it works. So, and there's so many benefits to using the mantra, at least when I discuss on the internet or other occasions. You get on the offensive and you get to talk about what we get to talk about, want to talk about. And you're not having to excuse yourself from being racist or anything. And you're also taking the moral high ground. So
it works.
That's
what I used to get paid for. I made a good salary and a good retirement out of this. But I still can't get people to use it. kind of thing. I really should be sitting in a corner drooling by now. Because it is so frustrating.
Yes, it is. So that was what we was wondering about, how to get people to use it.
Yeah.
But,
I'll leave that to you folks. You know, the blog did that for me. Now I've got a group of people who you can do the, you know, do this thinking and so forth. I used to sit around and just shake my head. Like I said, the people who say that about immigration, what could be more obvious than the fact that labor votes? Labor is not like other things. Labor votes. The people you bring in make up your society. Well, I presented that in an economics, it was a public choice meeting. There were two Nobel Prize winners there in public choice, and nobody challenged me. It was rather obvious that the environment, the productive environment of America, for example, comes from its people. The people have a right to share it. The reason that people invest money in Norway and not in Mexico is because Norway is run by Norwegians and Mexico is run by Mexicans. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Now, that's real money. I'm talking about on the exchange. You can't get anything like the same interest rate. But the libertarians say if those same Mexicans inhabit Norway, the interest rate will stay the same. That is a little bit crazy, but I got that. I said it. And it got around some, but you won't hear conservatives or anybody else making that simple point. There's something about basic points. I guess most people just want to enjoy themselves rather than making a difference.
So what we should do is just repeat the mantra as much as we can. And these basic points.
You have to also remember it's a tool. You know what I said about our friend in Britain. The BNP.
Nick Griffin.
Yeah, Nick. You have to learn to use. See, the mantra is a tool.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things is learning how to use it, how to get it in, how to get people to hear it. To me, that's kind of fun. A lot of people, I guess, consider it work. But it's a tool. You have to use it in the environment you're working in. And all these things that I come up with, and that's what happens. I don't know if I can give you this picture, but a lot of times I find people using points I make in the media in an entirely different way from the way I said it, but it fits. In the first place, they use my idea, but it isn't, the way they put it is not identified with me. But the way they use it often is perfect for the situation they're in.
So these ideas that grow into arguments in debate, how do we get them out there? How do we put them out there so people can grab hold of them and use them in debates? Because I've seen some make videos of the mantra. We've tried to put it into audio clips, such as this, for instance. How do we get it out there?
Well, what I would ask you is, how do you know when you've got it out there? Most people are used to reading history of thought books, you know, political history books, and they have so-and-so said, wrote so-and-so book, and then some politician picked it up, and suddenly there were torchlight parades. Mm. But that's not the way the real thing works. What we're doing now is, as I keep saying, the way the world is determined. You're not going to know. When you can use the mantra. I remember some propagandist, it's a classic statement in the history of propaganda. He said, when you have said something so many times that you're mumbling it in your sleep, it is just barely beginning to spread. You have to hammer and hammer. You're trying to determine the history of the world here. And so when you put the mantra out there, you're not going to get somebody writing you back and saying, my entire life has changed. I have decided that, you know, that I'm going to make you the ruler of the country and all that. What you're going to get is like me. You're going to have to feel the pulse and see it go out. So you don't know whether what you did worked or not.
It goes into people's minds and it gets stored there and it will pop up later in the right situation.
Oh, a lot of times I have seen that mantra. For one thing, the mantra makes people gun shy. You know, they start off before they hear it with their chest thrown out and, you know, I am a white man, but I am an enemy of the evil whites have done.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what you often hear. I'm white, but.
Yeah. But then after I get through with the mantra, the chest isn't out there. They're afraid somebody's got to hit them with that. But you have to be in this game a long time to see that sort of thing happening. Ideas have to circulate. They have to mix. What I do is I keep putting it out there. I know they have effect but of course that was my business. I can see them, you know, in places in the media. Most people don't know what a respectable conservative is. So when I'm very impressed that something showed up in a respectable conservative magazine, you know, that's sort of a technical statement. You know, like an engineer would be talking about heat and temperature and so forth that he noticed. And so you don't know whether what you did worked or not. Actually, I had here a copy of the treaty, the genocide treaty. And if you read that, you will find this sort of activity for any other race against any other race is, in fact, specifically forbidden. For example, the the British panel lately, I read this in National Review of all places, they were recommending that Europeans not have children officially. Because they were pointing out that the carbon output of the average Ethiopian child is something like 1 in 1,300 of the, well, 1 in 300 of the carbon output of a European child. So they officially recommended that Europeans not have children.
And you know, white people listening to that to refrain from having children because they.
Oh, yeah, they do their carbon. That's the thing now, their carbon count. And not having children. Well, if you look at the genocide treaty, it has specifically discouraging any group from having children, any identifiable group from having children, is genocide.
Right.
Yeah, that's in the treaty. The British government just did is actually in the treaty they ratified as a crime.
It says killing members of the group or imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group.
That's a specific.
That's genocide.
Right. That's a specific genocide. I mean, that's one of like the six headings that they have there. But it's kind of funny. And as I say, if any other, if they had done that with any race except the white one, they'd be in jail. America has not, and apparently never will, ratify the genocide treaty, by the way. Just, we're a little worried about what you crazy Europeans might do over here. Well, you're so polite. I guess you're listening to an old man, but I seem to have done all the talking.
It's been extremely interesting. I'm just sitting here listening, and I mean, you have a wealth of information, and it's been enjoyable and fun and interesting altogether.
Well, I'm passing the torch on to you, so I'm depending on you.
It would certainly be interesting to have you talk some other time.
Anytime. Just give me a time and place.
All right. Well, before we wrap up this interview, what is your advice to young pro-whites who want to use your political strategies in real life?
Well, all my advice is going into the blog.
And where can they find that?
It's www.whitakeronline.org/blog. And any information, anything I have to give you, I've made speeches where I've said, you know, you can contact me there. But the blog is what I'm dedicated to. I'm passing the torch on to people like you two and BNP guy, you know, Lord Nelson and Brian there, who's taking up most of the work on the blog outside of the writing. So I'm getting some good young people helping me out.
Anyone can go in there, read your blog, comment on it.
Sure. Go ahead and make your comments there. We haven't had many... We haven't had anybody. Now, to give you an idea how effective this is, again, it's so obvious, nobody notices it. You notice every word I just said is in caps. We get nobody attacking us.
Right.
Nobody goes into comments and decides to take me on.
There hasn't been one single comment trying to attack you or your what you write?
I haven't seen a comment, I guess, in 4 years.
Well, you can be sure the liberals are reading it, so they must not like what they're reading.
They want to fight, and that's what I mean. They do not want to face me or the people I train. Now, again,
right,
that's such an obvious point. How many conservative things where open discussion have you seen where, you know, thousands of people are reading it and nobody takes us on? So it must be doing something right.
Oh, it certainly is.
Okay.
Well, Hans, do you have any last questions?
No.
No, okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Bob Whitaker, for agreeing to do this interview. It has
been
a pleasure and an honor.
Yes, sir. Anytime. Okay. Be good.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.